The Honest Money Podcast is powered by 10X Investments, a licensed financial services provider. Consult with your financial advisor and let's 10X your future together.
Welcome to Honest Money. We're answering your questions again. And one of the big kind of themes that we get from investors who are looking at investing in shares is whether dividend investing is a good idea. And I think it's a topic that's really worth talking about because I'm a big fan of companies that pay dividends, but I wouldn't blindly follow one strategy for investing in shares only. I think it's always worthwhile understanding what you're doing when you follow a particular style or strategy. So let's talk about dividend investing and whether it's the answer to all questions and prayers. So just quickly to understand, there are lots of companies in the world that especially bigger, older, more established businesses that are generating cash flow and making profits every year. So they're generating more income than they're spending. And so they build up profit. And generally with a company, they've got two choices. They can accumulate some of that money and keep it in savings for a rainy day. It's kind of like an emergency fund for a business. Or they can decide to give that money back to the shareholders. When you give money back to shareholders as a listed company, there are two main ways. The one is you pay dividends. So let's say you earned 100 and your costs were 70, including tax. That means you've got 30 left to pay out. And you could decide to keep 10 just for a rainy day, and that means you pay out 20 to your shareholders. And all the shareholders would take that 20, and it would be divided according to the size of their shareholding. It's quite a nice deal for the shareholder because they're paid for the share, and now they're getting some return on that without having to sell the share. And generally, that's been the way that shareholders have benefited from owning a company for decades, if not centuries. More recently, and I'm saying recently, but it's been a couple of decades now, there's been a shift to looking at share buybacks. So just to explain that, now with the same example, the company's earned 100, its costs were 70, and it's got 30 left. And it says, okay, let me set aside 10 for a rainy day. And instead of paying the 20 out as dividends to shareholders, what the company does is it starts to buy back shares in the stock market. So it takes shares that people are willing to sell, and that price is done at the market price, and it neutralizes those shares. So what happens is they become treasury shares. They just sit there, and if the remaining shareholders stay invested, what that means is that the future profits of the company will be divided by a smaller number of shareholders. So effectively, the profit per share will rise. So it's very attractive for shareholders as well because they might not be getting a dividend, but they have more value per share than they had before the share buyback. It's a little bit complicated around share buybacks because a lot of the time, management of listed companies also like share buybacks because they will get measured according to how much profit they generate per share. It's called earnings per share. And so if they use the cash flow of the company to buy back shares, they're improving the earnings per share. And so they look like they've done a better job than they have. So some people, especially someone like Warren Buffett and some of the big value investors don't really like share buybacks, kind of mindless share buybacks because they think management of companies get a big incentive to kind of just generate as much cash as they can without growing the profits of the company by selling more stuff and doing more business. They just do financial engineering. And that's a big criticism of share buybacks. And so dividends, as an example, would kind of instill a financial discipline. Because companies need to generate actual cash flow to pay out a dividend. They can't borrow money and pay out dividends all the time. That's just gonna get them into deep trouble later. So you can't really lie about a dividend. If you're a shareholder and the dividend gets paid into your bank account, that's a real thing. So a lot of the time, there are a chunk of investors who really value the idea of earning dividends from their shares. It's a way of generating income. It keeps management honest and disciplined, and you can see over a 2 or 3 year period if the company is performing well actually as a business as opposed to as a share, because those dividends need to keep growing at least to track inflation. There will be times when share prices get really volatile. So you'll see, you know, stock markets implode. And if companies are still performing well, then you might find that their dividends as a rand value or as a dollar value actually stay consistent, even though their share price has dropped. And that's very attractive to shareholders as well, because, you know, your share price might go from 100 down to 80, but your dividend stays at 20, as an example. And, you know, suddenly you're earning a dividend of 20 and your share price is 80, it you know, your dividend yield has jumped up quite a bit if you take 20 over 80 as a percentage. So dividends are very nice for long-term shareholders as well. So is a dividend strategy the answer to all prayers for share investors? No. Unfortunately, there are a solid base of companies that are high quality, high growth, that never pay dividends. And the best example I can always think of is Berkshire Hathaway, which is Warren Buffett's company. So Buffett is sitting on an enormous amount of cash in his business right now. You know, at last count, I think it was $150 billion. And he is telling investors that you know, the interest that he's earning is okay on that cash, but he's keeping that powder dry because he thinks there will be an opportunity in the future to deploy some of that cash to buy very big businesses that get into financial difficulty, or to lend money to big businesses that find themselves in trouble. So he won't pay out cash. What he will do is just keep accumulating, and every now and then he'll do a share buyback when he thinks the price of Berkshire Hathaway is very low. Then he'll offer, he'll buy some of those shares because he thinks the share price is below the asset value of the company. And he's got a very disciplined buyback program, and the management of Berkshire Hathaway have no incentives based on earnings per share. So they don't get paid to do share buybacks. They get paid to grow the underlying value of the businesses that they own. So if you're a Berkshire Hathaway shareholder, the only way that you can actually make some money, and spend that money on your Berkshire Hathaway shares is not through dividends, but actually selling, one or two shares every now and then. So that's my classic kind of non-dividend paying share. But the other ones that are a big class of shares that just don't pay dividends at all are generally the high growth tech businesses. You know, if you think about, some of the tech businesses in their early days, you know, they were growing really quickly and generating a lot of revenue growth, but they were making no profits. And all the revenue that they generated, they simply reinvested into the business. And used that revenue to keep prompting growth. And some of those companies made losses for a long period of time before they started to actually make a profit. And if you're a dividend investor, then you're not going to be exposed to any of those companies at all, because they're just not going to pay you dividends. What might happen, and you can see it with a share like Apple, is that eventually, once they've grown and they become very profitable businesses and they're generating so much cash that they can use some of the cash to keep funding growth and still have some cash left over, those kind of companies start to pay a dividend. In their early days of dividend paying, they might be quite small dividend payers, and in which case they might not be on the radar of a dividend tracking index or a dividend fund, a unit trust fund. And so if you want to buy those, you might need to buy them as a share directly rather than via an exchange-traded fund or a unit trust. And so that's where it gets a bit more complex. And, you know, as someone like Apple or a company like Apple starts to get bigger and generate more and more cash, you might find that their dividends increase over time, and then they fall into the dividend-paying index or fall into the radar of the dividend-paying or dividend-tracking unit trusts. Dividend investing as a blind strategy, I'm not convinced, but dividend investing as part of an overall strategy, I think it makes sense to me. And especially, you know, if you combine, for example, a dividend index with a generic stock market index. So let's just say you buy, a dividend aristocrats or a long-term dividend paying index, and then you use that in combination with just a world index or an S&P 500 index or in South Africa, top 50 index, something like that. Then all of a sudden, having a dividend strategy will be good because you're earning some income from your dividends. You've got companies that have a discipline of paying out dividends, but you have an exposure to the growth companies that might not pay any kind of a dividend, and you're doing that through the top 50 index, the S&P 500 index, or the world index. So there is a way to combine index investing with a general kind of a stock market index or market cap index way of investing. And for me, that's very attractive. If you prefer the unit trust world, then having a look at a unit trust that tracks a general equity index as well as a dividend index a dividend portfolio might become a kind of sensible. So I think just look at those as a combination rather than one strategy that fits all. I know in social media, a lot of the guys will talk about how clever they are by buying dividend paying companies, and they'll show you screenshots of their dividends that they earned. And I'm sure it's true, but remember that they are paying a bit of a cost in terms of lost opportunities elsewhere. So just be careful that you kind of follow social media blindly and think that that's the answer to all questions. It's not. Always when you're making investment decisions, they've got to be based on your situation, your requirements, and your long-term financial objectives. And for me, social media, podcasts, all of those are a good source of research. It's a good source of understanding why you're doing things and what will work for you and what won't work. But it's surely not a way to just blindly follow what other people are doing, because their situation is totally different to yours. And remember, a lot of the time, these people on social media are showing a strategy that they might not even be employing themselves. They might be completely broke and just trying to build up a social media profile. And they're good at social media. It doesn't mean they're good at investing. So just be careful there. So many companies and scams and schemes have blown up in the last while based on the media profile of an operator and not on solid investment principles. So always do your homework, be sensible. If you don't know what to do, buy the index. That's a great low-cost way of building wealth. Thanks so much for listening. We appreciate your questions. Please keep sending them through, and we'll try our best to answer them as best we can.
The Stradivarius violin is considered to be the most emotive instrument in the world. That's why you'll often hear it in investment ads, adding drama and the utmost importance to their philosophies, or for the announcement of a fancy new fund manager. 10X Investments don't need dramatic instruments to seem impressive. They let the results sing for themselves. So 10X your future without the drama. 10X is a licensed FSP.